Welcome to the Empowering Agency Workers, a podcast for all temporary workers. If you're unsure of your rights, unsure how to find work, or just plain unsure, we're here to help. It's all too easy to be exploited, so your expert host, Julia Kermode, will empower you to succeed.
Welcome to our podcast episode today. I'm really pleased to be talking to Belinda Johnson. She is owner of an employment research business, and what that means is she knows an awful lot about what's going on in the jobs market. And I'm really happy to have her here to tell us about what she knows is going on and whether there's any bright spots or any positives out there to be taken. So, hi, Belinda. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to... thanks very much for the opportunity to talk to you.
No, it's brilliant because I don't know anybody who knows more about what's going on out there in the jobs market than you, Belinda. But I know you hate it when I say that, but it's true. So...
Don't tell the ONS that, because they will probably think they know a lot more about the jobs market.
yes, that's true. So actually, talking of the ONS, which is the Office of National Statistics, although I'm sure our listeners will know that, what do latest figures tell us, either from the ONS figures or other government data? And I know that's a big question. So what would you pick out as the headlines for what's going on at the moment?
Yeah, so I'd start with what's happening with the UK economy and output.
Okay.
So unfortunately, that's still struggling. Mm-hmm. When the pandemic hit, that initially dropped by about 21%. And since then, it's been sort of inching its way back. Mm. But by November, unfortunately, that dropped again. So it dropped by another 2.6%. In okay. November. So by that point, we're still about 8.5% behind pre-pandemic levels.
Okay.
From subsectors, there's only construction that's been restored to its sort of former levels. And unfortunately, it's services that's dragging the economy down. And services represent 80% of our output. So that's really sort of the challenges that we're facing.
So when you say services, I guess you mean hospitality and that sort of thing?
Wider than that, really. So it's everything sort of professional, scientific and technical, IT and communications. So, yes, it's anything apart from production and manufacturing. Sorry, production, okay. manufacturing and construction. Everything else sits within the services category.
And I think that a lot of the UK's economy is reliant on those professional services, but correct me if I'm wrong, because this is totally your expertise, not mine.
80% of output comes within that area. So that's why we've got the challenges,
yeah.
because that's where the stop starts happening because of the lockdowns.
Yeah.
So that's why our kind of recovery has been slow to date and is now, unfortunately, sort of dropping back a bit. And if you kind of look forward from November, when we were in lockdown two, and in December we've gone into lockdown three, it's unlikely that the output figure will improve. In fact, it's probable that the output will drop further in the data that comes out for January and February. So that's kind of the backdrop to the situation. And again, if we roll it forward to January's figures, so we have the ONS data that records actual outcomes, and
yeah.
then we also have some really good sort of real-time estimates from them. So and they've really sort of stepped up within the pandemic, and they've moved to some new means of gathering sort of information about some estimates. So they're
okay.
actually reporting on a weekly basis now.
Oh.
And if we look at the estimates for sort of mid-January, we had about 71% of UK businesses are trading, or only, I would say, 71% of UK businesses trading, which, to put that into context of lockdown one, the lowest level in lockdown one was actually 66%. So we're only really sort of just above that figure, which is a challenge.
Yeah.
So we really do have that problem of many businesses now having gone back to being temporarily paused or not trading. So in terms of what that looks like for those businesses, 4 in 10 say that the pandemic has either impacted turnover and or their profits. And we've also got 3 in 10 enterprises saying that they've either got no cash reserves or they've only got up to 3 months cash reserves. So that's the kind of precarious situation for many UK businesses.
So did you say 3 in 10 then? So that's 1/3 of businesses, more or less, have no cash reserves beyond a few months then?
Yeah, so 4% have no cash reserves and 26% have less than 3 months cash reserves. So that's, and that's with all the money that the UK government's actually pumped in as well. So if you think about the schemes that it's provided grants through, and also all the loan facilities, government-backed loan facilities, all of those. And when I last did a tally, that added up to over £180 billion worth of funding or set off or VAT deferrals or whatever. So even with that amount of funding going into businesses, we've still got 3 in 10 that have less than 3 months cash reserves, and that's really challenging for an employer.
It's just a mind-blowing amount of money that the government has pumped in, but I mean, when you think about it in real terms, those businesses are not certain what's going to happen to them in 6 months time. They might not simply be here anymore, and that's really terrifying, actually, isn't it?
It is. And, they've got to sort of juggle that remaining sort of cash. So what we saw through the early stages of the pandemic, even though there was a furlough scheme there, which we'll come back to doubtless, many had to reduce workers' hours. Many had to reduce workers' pay just to make whatever monies they had coming in, cover the reality of sort of trying to keep people in work. So this crash, never before have we actually seen a drop in the average number of hours worked for those people who have a job, like we have in the pandemic. And those average hours worked have not come back yet to where they were before. But if you go back over sort of two previous recessions, you just will not have seen that sudden crash in the average number of hours worked. So even those people that have a job weren't necessarily required full time, or they, the employers couldn't afford to pay them full time, so took an hours cut at best, and unfortunately some also took a pay cut as a consequence of that as well. If they were working 80% of time, the best case scenario was they were getting 80% of time on their previous wage, but some people also took a pay cut as well for those hours. So really, really challenging for people out there.
And this sounds really unfair, if you like, to the workforce, but it is. I do always think it's worth pointing out in relation to the government's furlough scheme and job retention scheme, rather, that the employers still have costs to pay on top of the funding they get from government. And I think that sometimes general public doesn't always realise that. So it's not a free handout from the government, because there are employers' national insurance costs to pay on top and other things. But I don't want to get into the politics of it. I just thought I would point that out for our listeners. So while we're on the depressing stuff, what about the employment rate and redundancies? Because I know that there are official figures on those as well.
So again, headline figures on that make it look as if it's not too bad, I guess, if from one perspective. So again, there's a bit of a time lag here. So the best available data we have is for the period September to November 2020. Okay. So the unemployment rate reached a figure of 5.0%. That's around 1.7 million people. Wow. And to sort of set that into context of where it was before the pandemic, that's a rise of about 350,000 from the period January to March through to that September to November. But that doesn't really truly paint the entire picture of what's going on, and that's been evidenced by the fact that that the ONS have gone to great lengths to explain within their monthly publications that there are kind of other factors in play behind the official unemployment figures. So they talk about people who are seemingly still employed and therefore still on within the workforce numbers, but actually they're currently temporarily away from work and they're not earning any money. Now, many of those people are likely to be zero-hour contract workers that they're actually on a contract of employment, but currently there's no work for them. So they're officially employed, but they're not receiving any money. And the last figure that we saw for that was about 278,000 people that may be in that category, over and above those who are officially unemployed. And then the other bit of data that that ONS refers to each month now is HMRC's real-time payroll data, which the last data we have for that is December. And that showed that actually there was 780-ish fewer people on payrolls in December than in the same month in 2019. So that's probably a clearer picture. That 780 is probably a clearer picture of kind of the people who are currently without work than perhaps that 350,000 additional people that are officially in the unemployment register.
So the official figures are heavily caveated then, obviously. And so the official figures might actually, I don't want to put words into your mouth, but from what you've just said, from my understanding, it could be double the number out of work.
Definitely away from work without earning any money from work in which they are employed. And the ONS is being sort of very open and transparent about that. It's just the way that that it's agreed that unemployment is recorded, or when unemployment numbers are recorded. So they said they've gone to sort of great pains to sort of to explain that it could be a much larger figure from that. And obviously the key factor here is furloughing. So furloughing is keeping millions of people with monies. Where if that furloughing scheme weren't there, they may well be again on that unemployment register or away from work without any money. The furloughing again is something that we've never seen before in previous recessions. But again, to give you a scale of what's happening on furloughing, at its peak in the first lockdown, it probably went up to supporting about 8-9 million people. And then by the end of the period that it was supposed to work to, that was the 31st of October when it was supposed to cease, the numbers had dropped about 2.4 million. So again, that just sort of shows you the kind of that slide down, and it was still propping up about sort of 2.4 million people with some form of payments. When lockdown two happened in early November and the job retention scheme was extended, those numbers increased back up to about 4 million.
Wow.
So that's the kind of scale it went into. And then when we've now gone into lockdown three, the estimates from ONS suggest that that figure's now gone back up to about 5 million. And that's about 17% of the workforce, so 17% of the people that would be entitled to furloughing.
So
5 million is the figure that the furloughing scheme is still supporting. But as you said, there's a significant difference for employers this time around, because unlike the furlough scheme in lockdown one, there were no costs to the employers until July when they started to phase some in. In lockdown three, the furloughing is a very, very different picture, and there are quite significant costs to employers to keep people on that furlough. But, you know, UK employers are still funding support for, in addition to the government, for around about 5 million people.
Okay. And, you know, I think it's very good that the Office of National Statistics are caveating their figures, because I think any statistic of any sort is always subject to kind of how it's established. And if there are flaws with, but potentially flaws with how it's established, I do think it's really positive that they're being transparent about that. And I didn't mean to kind of make you say something that was perhaps controversial. That wasn't my intention at all. So apologies for that. So we've talked about the kind of employed workforce, by which I'm including kind of 0-hour contracts and things like that. But what about self-employment? Now, I know most of our listeners will be potentially agency workers and involved in that space, but I do want to just cover off briefly what's going on with self-employed people.
Yeah, so again, just to give kind of a feel for self-employment and its importance, it's historically been about 15% of the UK workforce. So hovered around that sort of figure for a while now. But we've seen self-employment significantly impacted as a consequence of the pandemic and other factors that we can come back to. But if we look again at that period of September to November, so by that period of September to November 2020, there are actually 10% fewer self-employed workers within the workforce than there were in the previous year. So that's a loss of 510,000 self-employed workers. So that's really quite significant. Now, there are other factors in play. We do have a piece of legislation sort of rumbling towards implementation that has been rumbling for a while now. So the off-payroll IR35 means that a number of jobs out of that 510,000 lost may just be reclassified some other form of employed work. So I don't think we can wholly attribute that loss to the pandemic, but certainly a significant proportion of that will have come from, you know, people just switching off contingent labour that, you know, that they don't necessarily need during the pandemic. So what that split, we just don't know. We are having a look at some business death data, which does show a marked increase in business deaths during 2020. I think it's 17% up on the average of the previous 3 years. Wow. So, so you know, that will have contributed to that loss. But the most likely, the vast majority of that has come as a consequence of the pandemic.
And I suppose it's not easy to be self-employed and find that you haven't got the work. But from the business's perspective, I guess that is unfortunately part of the point of having that flexible labour, that actually when you don't need them, you don't continue their contract if there's no work. And it's been really, really tough. And I've been doing a bit of work to sort of support self-employed people, but it's been a really rough ride. And again, I don't want to get political, but I know a number of types of self-employed people haven't really had the equal government support as compared to employees. And I think that's a real, real shame. And I hope it gets levelled up. But anyway, moving very swiftly on, we have seen some headlines that that job vacancies are increasing. What's your take on that?
Yeah, so if I just quickly touch on temporary employment, because I think that's that's, you know, an important counterbalance to the self-employment. So is the other sort of major form of sort of contingent working. And you might have seen headline figures to suggest that temporary employment, actually in contrast to self-employment, has actually been increasing.
Yes.
So again, if we look at those numbers, they're about 4% up year on year. Which again, you know, logically it sort of says, well, that's good because people are, you know, grabbing people to, you know, to as and when you know, demand is there, you know, there is demand for contingent work on a temporary employed basis. But we did some analysis of the underlying components of temporary employment. So temporary employment isn't just work through agencies. It's also fixed term contract working directly with employers, it's seasonal work, it's casual work. And what the analysis shows is that, you know, the upward rise in temporary employment numbers is actually coming virtue of fixed term contract working.
Right.
So in contrast to agency working, casual working and seasonal work, which have all declined year on year, it's actually fixed term contract working that's pushing up. Now, that could be some self-employment coming across into external contract working. It could be employers being nervous about taking people on a permanent basis, so actually offering people a fixed term contract until they have more certainty about, you know, what's happening with the economy. But unfortunately, that headline figure on temporary employment is not courtesy of increased opportunities via the agency route. It is more directly with the employer on a fixed term contract basis. But that's actually an opportunity, you know, for people who've historically looked down the channels of temporary work. They may want to have a look at you know, employed opportunities on a fixed term contract basis. So I think that is, you know, we can very easily turn that into a positive, a different channel to have a look at, and perhaps some of the ones that we've been looking at before for work.
Yeah, and when I saw the headline figures, I did sort of assume it was the agency market. So it's good to have that clarified. And it's also, I did think it was positive because it did show that businesses are bringing people in when they need them, albeit they can't necessarily provide a permanent role. But I think that's quite understandable at the moment, especially when you think back to what we said at the start in terms of their kind of cash reserves. You know, it's not necessarily possible to offer a permanent role right now for businesses.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's positive from a contingent working perspective. It might mean that we need to adjust how we think about contingent working as a job seeker. And we just may need to look at different channels to see jobs advertised than perhaps we were looking at before, which when we get to it would be my key message anyway.
Yeah.
On the job vacancy data that you referenced, so there are two components of that. You've got the official vacancy numbers, so the official number of job openings, and then you've got the job posting activity that sort of feeds off that. So what you will have read is that that activity is improving. It absolutely has. So again, when the pandemic hit, we'd previously seen about 800,000 official job vacancies across the period, you know, January to March as an example. When the pandemic hit, that plummeted to 340,000 across the period April to June. So that's just to give you a scale of the amount of official jobs that were switched off. And then by the most recent data that we've got, we can see it back to about 580,000. So that's about 72% of pre-pandemic levels. So that's the point that we're kind of hovering around in terms of job openings. So there definitely are jobs out there. Absolutely, you know, 72% of what was there in January is a positive. And that plays out into the job advertising stats as well. So again, by the third week in January, we look at the ONS report data from Adzuna, and that data is showing that that job advertising levels feeding off those job vacancies is about 74% of prior year levels. So that's kind of where we've got back to. So we're looking about three quarters of the previous level of job opportunities. But it's that hides the fact that within certain occupations and certain geographies, you know, it's not level. So, you know, certain markets dried up completely. Whereas, you know, obviously, you know, high street retail, there isn't any demand for that outside, you know, the food establishments, food retail establishments. You know, there's no hiring from a you know, from jobs in stores perspective. There's no sort of real hiring going on there at all. So behind that, three quarters of where we were before does hide the fact that within some areas there aren't any jobs, but there are significantly fewer than that, which means that people that perhaps that have always worked in that area are going to have to think, you know, out of the box.
Yeah.
Look right, see what other opportunities are there. But that is hard, you know, even to get going on that is a hard process to start on, because it makes you have to start to think about, well, what else could I do? You know, what other skills do I need? You know, what am I lacking? Do I need some training? Will they even consider me? And of course, the other factor in this is that the job application volumes for the available work have absolutely spiked, and this for people seeking work can be so hard and so demotivating, because, you know, you spend all your time applying for work, and even at the best of times when there wasn't a spike in application volumes, you know, it was a bit hit and miss about, you know, the extent to which employers would get back to people. But if you're filling your time, you know, because you're trying to find work, applying for jobs, and you're getting nothing back, or you're just getting an automated response back, or you're getting the, you know, the email that says, if you haven't heard from us in 2 weeks, bad luck, you know, that can be absolutely soul destroying. So again, I would make the point that it's time to start looking for work elsewhere, different types of work, And seeking that work through different channels. And that's where I think the opportunities are when we get to that bit.
Definitely. And it is, I mean, we've been talking within iWork quite a bit about people who are applying for jobs and not hearing back. And it is so, so tough. And, you know, it's hard to keep going, and it's hard to spot the opportunities. So, sometimes we've done some pieces around this on other podcasts where you have to kind of change your mindset a little bit and to kind of see what's out there, see what your skills can be potentially applied to. And, you know, in terms of looking at what is out there, are we seeing any positives, any kind of growth within any sectors or any opportunities?
Absolutely, definitely. And that really is the good news.
Great.
So just from the job advertising data, there are three sectors that have actually come back to where they were before in terms of advertising levels, those three being construction, manufacturing, transport, storage and logistics. So those three sectors are as busy in mm-hmm. terms of, excuse me, hiring activity as they were before, according to the data. Looking beyond that, that's when you start to look into pockets. And thankfully, you know, we do quite a lot of work having to find the pockets of opportunity, which is, you know, I've said previously to people that in the last year, you, on the one hand, you're looking at the jobs data, which is can be depressing sometimes. On the other hand, looking at the opportunity areas, you know, that's quite a nice sort of counterbalance to look at. So absolutely, there are areas of opportunity. For example, the life sciences industry is in many cases hiring like crazy. And often being very good at encouraging people to their own career sites mm-hmm. rather than advertising through job boards. So, you know, looking at the life sciences industry's career sites themselves, you know, can be sort of quite enlightening. And you know, many of them have got hundreds of vacancies on there.
Wow. You know,
which is quite staggering. And again, if you look at something like IT jobs, you know, many of the employers that would have historically hired, you know, particularly contingent workers on an IT basis or with IT skills, you know, their opportunities may have dried up, but there are tons of opportunities in any areas associated with online, with technologies that can either help address a current issue, or where people have seen an opportunity to capitalize upon need or demand. So that whole sort of online area is where all of the investment money is going into.
Mm.
Opportunity comes jobs.
I guess the online stuff is because businesses have had to work remotely in the last year. And so you know, I don't know, for example, say you're a local shop, you would have traditionally had your presence on the high street, perhaps. But the last year has shown us that they also need to have an online presence. And without that online presence, they're potentially not going to be able to survive as we are in the pandemic. So I guess the pandemic is driving those online and technical job opportunities, but I don't actually know that, I'm just guessing.
So twofold. So from employers that have had to facilitate remote working for their previously office-based workers, there has been significant demand there initially to make that happen.
Mm.
Then secondarily, people sort of thought, what about cybersecurity? So again, there was a surge in demand for people in that area because, you know, making people be able to work at home is one thing. Making your information flow as secure as it was when everybody was on premise is a completely different thing. So again, there was an initial need for people to just help facilitate it, and then there was a second wave of demand for people that could help secure it. So that was sort of quite an interesting one. But the areas of online, again, which are so beyond making remote working work, what's also has been huge is, you know, things like, I mean, again, if you sort of take you know, people's nervousness to leave the home because of the virus. So, you know, things like Gusto and HelloFresh have apps demand from organisations like that have absolutely surged, to the point that I think both announced investment in new facilities within the UK to keep up with demand.
Wow.
It's not just about, you know, the production of those meals to go out that have absolutely spiked in terms of demand, but there's also everything else associated with, you know, growth of an organisation like that. You know, I had a look at TikTok this morning, just as a silly example. They've got 149 jobs currently live on their site.
Wow.
It's just thinking through all those different areas that have huge needs, workforce needs, spikes in workforce needs, because what they're servicing is a growth in demand as a consequence of the lockdowns and the continual lockdowns that we keep going through. As I say, they're not necessarily advertising through the channels that we would normally find our job opportunities. So I think, you know, for me, it's a case of, you know, thinking about the companies and going to their own sites and saying, okay, so what are they advertising on their own sites? Those are where there is a wealth of opportunity, perhaps that you may not be seeing on the other, through the other channels that you may be looking at for your work. So I think just, you know, think about the companies that you think may be doing well and go to their websites and see what they're advertising.
Yeah, and just on a side point there, it's not necessarily a job, it's more of a side hustle, but I know locally to where I live in Cheshire, what we saw was some individuals just setting up their own sideline to service those people who didn't want to leave their home or didn't feel able to leave their home. We've now got kind of local people making their own curries and things like that and delivering them to people, and you know, it's not necessarily a refined offering like you get from the larger businesses that have been doing this for a while, but there are those kind of local opportunities potentially if you want to set up a side hustle. I don't really like that phrase side hustle, by the way, but it does kind of sum up what I'm saying.
Or in the absence of any other opportunity. So I think, you know, for some people it would be a side hustle, for other people it would be, well, we can see an opportunity, you know, we'll give it a go. Because in the absence of employed work or even contingent work with an employer, it is relatively simple for people in the UK to actually establish a business and set up in business. And yes, of course, there are rules and protocols and standards. So there's loads of things to consider, but actually, you know, beyond all of those not constraining factors, but, you know, things to which you need to adhere, it's actually relatively simple to actually set up a business. And if you know, your community shows you can identify an opportunity, you know, from your community or you know, beyond your immediate community, because if you're selling online, you know, I think a lot of people are beginning to sort of say, well, look, I'll have a go. I'll absolutely have a go.
Yeah.
Setting up in business would be another opportunity. One that I would definitely encourage people to look at as well is you know, we see, you know, every other day news about the fact that, you know, when are people going to go back to the office? And, you know, whether this remote working thing is going to be the way that businesses operate in the future. But we're increasingly seeing employers advertise for remote jobs. Now, that's really, okay, really important, because when you do your searches for work, most people put in, you know, where you live and, you know, the commuting distance that you've prepared jobs for. I would actively encourage people to actually just put in the UK as their search area.
Yeah.
I quickly looked on LinkedIn this morning. And in the last week, there are 6,400 jobs posted that they're allowing people to actually operate on a remote basis. In the last month, it was about 19,300 jobs, where the employers are now saying this is a remote job. So they're actually hiring as a remote job. So where you live is absolutely irrelevant.
Yeah.
Now, that may only be about 3% of jobs that we advertise that we can see at the moment, but it's still a pool of opportunities for people to sort of live in Reading. But actually, there's an employer based in Cheshire that's saying I can do this job on a remote basis. So I would actively encourage people to hit that button on LinkedIn, in this case, that says remote, and look at all of the jobs that people are saying. It doesn't matter where you live anymore, if you work for us remotely. Now, they may change their mind in the future, but actually we're all interested in the here and now. We're all interested in learning in the here and now. So hit that button on LinkedIn and see what's being advertised.
And talking of changing minds in future, I actually think that some employers who are sort of planning to return to the office as and when they can for their workforce, I think that some of those employers may find they have to change what they think they're doing because their employees, their current employees, have got used to working from home and actually they might not want to commute in every day. Now, it could be, and I think there are sound reasons for some businesses to have people come into the office and kind of that sharing of ideas and being together, and I get that, but I do think that aside, they will perhaps find that they have to be a bit more flexible in roles where traditionally people have always had to commute in, and I think that's really positive. And the other positive I think about remote working is that it opens up access to jobs for people who perhaps aren't able to commute. You know, they might be physically unable to, or they might have caring responsibilities or family responsibilities that make that normal commute time difficult. So I am hopeful about the future for that type of flexible working. And I think that's the only positive to have come out of this whole pandemic, if we can view it as a positive.
I think that, you know, it's likely that for those who keep their premises, a certain proportion of roles will likely be classified as remote working only in the future. Others, again, because you're taking your point about the fact that people have got used to, you know, we've nearly had a year of this now.
Yeah.
Got used to not doing that commute, you know, not spending that money on commuting costs, not spending that money on, you know, the food and drink that they buy. And I know that's hard for the, you know, the towns and cities perhaps that they were commuting to, and we need to address that as kind of a separate issue. But you know, people have got used to it, and, you know, they may have adjusted their childcare as a consequence of that. So again, there are so many considerations, you know, that have come from being forced to remote work, then actually, you know, at the point at which employers sort of say, okay, you know, it looks as if it's okay to ask people to come back, I don't think it will be wholesale, because of not just they've realized that they don't need everybody in the office all the time, but also that the workers have realized the benefits that have come from not having to be on premise, you know, all day, every day. There's a really interesting move by, I think it was Great Western Railways. They've asked the Department for Transport for the right to have some new season tickets, not just those, you know, 7 days a week, for which most people would use them 5 days a week, but they've applied for two new season tickets, one of which would be to use on 1 day a week, and the other would be, I think it is, to use on 1 day a month. It wouldn't be one a month because he'd just buy that ticket. But they're two very, very different season tickets that they have applied for the right to be able to offer people, in recognition of the fact that they, you know, even when we get to the other side of this, they don't expect, you know, commuters to need their season tickets of old. There's this very interesting sort of dynamic, you know, other things that are sort of playing out in that sort of ecosystem that used to support, you know, on-premise working.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it from the sort of transport perspective. So that's really interesting. And the other interesting thing, I saw a business, a headline from one of the big kind of consultancy firms, that they are now planning to convert a lot of their office space into meeting rooms. So I think the underlying thing behind that is that they're not expecting their staff to come into the office every day, but they are expecting people to come in for meetings and that kind of cross-fertilization of ideas. And I thought that was really interesting too.
Because I you know, some organisations, you know, some are boldly saying, well, that's it, you know, we're going to be a virtual company for But others recognise the value in people coming together on an infrequent basis. So I do think that, you know, it definitely isn't the end of the office, but it definitely is likely to be, you know, the end of, you know, full time on premise working for 100% of the workforce. So, you know, unless you're in retail or in hospitality or whatever, but, you know, it's a definite change there. And other forms of virtual working as well. You reference sort of side hustles. So if we just quickly chat about the, you know, the gig working, we had Lorna Davidson from Red Wigram. Little while ago. I mean, that those platforms are really interesting to have a look at, really, really interesting, because they're providing work opportunity that is very different. Give an example of what you might find on there. You know, they need people to check product in supermarkets. They need people to, of all things, you know, purchase products from the online delivery services and check the quality of those products, you know, So they're actually offering, you know, gigs through there that people don't necessarily have, you know, when you think of traditional work, you don't think of that as being traditional work. But what's really interesting is the potential to piece together a whole income from component parts. So I think, you know, it beyond, you know, I keep coming back to the same point, beyond those traditional channels that we sought, you know, perhaps whole-time work on a contingent basis, you know, currently it may be an opportunity to have a look beyond that and sort of say, okay, well, can I work contingently through, you know, multiple channels by sort of piecing together, you know, all these different opportunities. So I think, you know, whether it's, you know, Red Webbrand, there's People Per Hour, there's lots of different platforms out there that are offering, you know, little opportunities, and they've only got little opportunities at the moment because of the climate. You know, when they, you know, when things improve, you know, there's lots of opportunities there to work at events in hospitality. So there are lots of other things on there. But again, whilst there aren't necessarily as many whole time opportunities, there are, you know, smaller opportunities that are out there. Other things I think that are worth thinking through and pursuing is the surges in demand for a sudden need for a lot of contingent workers. Originally we had test and trace, then we had the whole vaccination initiative. Really interesting one at the moment coming through is the census. We've got a need for tens of thousands of people to work on the census, albeit for a short period of time. If you have a look on read.co.uk, you'll see all of the census jobs being advertised. Again, it's a burst of opportunity, but it's a mass need for contingent workers. Those opportunities again are very much worth having a look at. So I think, you know, if I think about all the areas of opportunity that we've talked about, there's an increasing need to kind of think and research. You know, where the opportunities might be. You know, they're not in the obvious places. You know, you're not seeing. I think it's just the time to kind of broaden our horizon, broaden our view of what work looks like and where we might find that work and which channels we need to go through to actually find that work. A lot more research based. I personally help kids every year trying to find work. It's something that I do because I think it's the right thing. So every year I probably help six or eight, you know, either school leavers or grads into work, because, you know, they don't necessarily have the knowledge to know the routes in. They don't necessarily have the knowledge of how to apply, how to get through interviews. And I can honestly say it got harder as 2020 went on. And all I would say to them all the time is, you know, you might, for example, you might have trained in media studies, you might want to be a journalist, but right here, right now, you're not going to get a job as a journalist. So rethink what you've learned and what your skills could be. And lo and behold, then we get that person a job in PR, or we get that person a job within a marketing agency, because, you know, creating content is not just about journalism. It's about where you can find work in creating content. So we've had to be creative, and with being creative comes a lot of research about, you know, well, I knew where to apply for journalist jobs, but I don't know where to apply for, you know, I don't know who's hiring for PR jobs. I don't know who's hiring for marketing jobs. So you have to broaden your horizon, A, to even accept the fact that you may need to do something different. And beyond doing something different, it's about working out, you know, the route into that work.
So, yeah.
More research-based, I think, is unfortunately the job of applying for work. I hope in the not too distant future there'll be lush opportunities again. But right here, right now, it's hard work.
Yeah, and we did a session last week with someone who is a careers advisor, actually, and so it's well worth listeners to today's podcast going back to listen to that one, and I'll put the link to that in the notes that go with today's one. And what you were saying about the kind of gig platforms is so true. And when I was talking to Lorna Davidson for a podcast episode, one of the things she was saying was that they've got people who come in and they try different things, and actually using those platforms to try a job that they might have previously thought no, it's not for me. But you can, that's the beauty of those types of platforms, is you can give things a go and you might be surprised.
What is permanency? I mean, even a permanent job is probably a series of different work opportunities that have been strung together.
Yeah.
So, you know, even those people that perhaps have been in with the same employer for 20 years may not have done the same job for those 20 years. So actually, mm-hmm. their 20-year tenure comprises, you know, various different gigs,
yes.
various different projects or various different roles that they have. So I think, the whole concept of permanency within work, I think we have to accept in the short to medium term, really doesn't exist. So I think just change our perspective on what we think about work, how we think tenure should be, and just grasp opportunities, even if they're not necessarily, you know, within the comfort zone, but just grasp which opportunities as they rise. And actually, you may fall in love with a new type of work, you may fall in love with a new sector, you may fall in love with a different type of working, or the nature of work that's changed for you. You may fall in love with it, may allow you to do other things apart from, you know, just work for one employer. You know, you may love your side hustle and your thing that you do on the side, and that may become a more important part of, you know, what you do, how you earn your income and who you are. So
yeah.
I just think, think it is going to change, and how am I going to embrace that change would be one.
I sort of feel quite positive by the view of the post-pandemic work situation, in terms of, for all those things that you've just said. So, you know, I think that the pandemic has taught us a lot about how we work, and I think that employers will be able to make better use of the resources they've got, because some people love working remotely, some really much prefer going to the office. Both are fine, and you know, that whole transition, I think we will be in a very different place, won't we? And you know, I look forward to the surge in demand for jobs, and you know, wouldn't it be great if we could get back there fairly quickly? But obviously it's out of our control. But I think we do have to remain a bit positive about the future, because, you know, one day the pandemic will have gone.
Yeah, here's hoping.
I've said that's on record now, so I really hope that that does actually happen. But there you go. Thank you so much for your time today and sharing so much knowledge. Really, really appreciate that. And you know, maybe in 6 months, 8 months, we can get you back and see whether our predictions are right. And who cares if they're wrong, because hopefully things will be much more positive anyway. So thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Empowering Agency Workers, hosted by Julia Kermode. For more information on today's discussion, please visit iwork.co.uk, where you can also join our growing community. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, then we would love you to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. We'll be back at the same time next week.